You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, where Christian leaders find strength, wisdom, and encouragement to lead with grace, courage, and purpose. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing nearly 1,000 guests over the last 20 years on various aspects of their leadership activity and journey. So whether you have a leadership title or are simply aiming to use the influence you have wisely, I hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and join us again next week.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck.
Welcome to the show that aims to support and encourage Christians who lead. I wonder if you've ever had a conversation that seemed to be going well, only for it to get very awkward very quickly. The phrase is often used, you clearly touched a nerve. Now that nerve may have come from many places, but today we're looking at one potential cause. Studies suggest 50 to 70% of the population will experience trauma at some point in their lives, with some 6.5 million experiencing what is classed as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. This has implications for us all. If you're one of the 50 to 70%, well, how is this affecting your leadership? And whatever your size of church or charity or company, chances are there are people known to you that are affected. Well, to help us understand this area and work out how we can best serve those that we lead, and indeed ourselves, I'm delighted to be joined by Ruth Stevens, the founding director of Join the Dots Solutions, whose strapline is equipping faith organizations and their teams to become trauma-informed. So welcome, Ruth. Lovely to have you on the Leadership Show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So how did you become interested in this whole area, Ruth?
Well, it's been a long journey, really, but I've always been interested in attachment and trauma, and my husband and I have adopted and fostered children. And through the years, I've been involved in children's church and met many kids that have come from challenging backgrounds. But I'm also an occupational therapist. And during my work as an OT, I've, in the last sort of 15, 20 years, I've specialised in working with children who've come from a background of trauma, mainly of adopted and fostered kids. And so during that time, I did quite a lot of training about sensory stuff, attachment, did a master's in attachment psychology. And then during that time, I worked in a clinic where we all specialised in trauma. And through that time, I was going into schools, and I did quite a few training sessions in schools about helping and supporting these children. And then I thought to myself, gosh, churches really need this. This is something the church needs desperately, to be able to support these children and young people, and also adults as well. So yeah, join the dots. We equip churches to support all ages. But yes, it came really from that position of recognizing that children's church youth groups possibly were not equipped in the way they ought to be, so that these children feel like they're included, and then they can journey to Jesus as well.
Right. And so you had to make the jump, I guess, from working in other spheres to be full time with this work.
Yeah, so I was praying about it, and I felt the Lord say to me that I should leave my job. And it was quite a big step. And I had confirmation of that. There was actually a prophetic word one Sunday at church about this. And so I took that step and I resigned. And within a week, I got an invitation to speak at a children's ministry conference about trauma. And so I thought, oh, my word, this is God all over this. And it took quite some time before I actually did leave my job. And then to actually set up Join the Dots, there's quite a long gap in between. But yeah, gradually it all built up, and it started with me pioneering some free webinars to everyone and anyone that I knew who was working in youth or children's work during the pandemic.
Well, so yeah, quite a start. So Ruth, we need to start with some definitions. Let's start with the word trauma, which I use many times in my introduction, and the condition PTSD, post traumatic stress disorder? Perhaps you could give us some idea of exactly what's meant. I know people will have a general idea, but.
Yeah. So people have different definitions, but I'll just go with the UK government definition because that is yeah, what a lot of people in this country would talk about. Trauma results from an event or series of events or set of circumstances that's experienced by an individual as harmful or life-threatening. While unique to the individual, generally the experience of trauma can cause lasting adverse effects, limiting the ability of that person to function and achieve their mental and physical and social and emotional and spiritual, it talks about as well, well-being. So yeah, for me, I would go with that, and that's based on other worldwide definitions from an organization called SAMHSA. But people would talk about how trauma isn't what happened to you. It's not really the event. In essence, trauma is what happened as a result of what happened to you. And it just comes to, it brings people to a point where they are unable to function and they've lost what we call agency. And the agency that we're talking about here is the ability to think clearly, to make decisions, to engage with life, to make choices, and just generally to be motivated. People who've been impacted by trauma will just be caving in under a lot of that. A guy called Bessel van der Kolk, he's written a book called The Body Keeps the Score. It's a great book to read or listen to. And he talks about how people who've experienced trauma experience the world through a different nervous system. And that to me is really striking. A person's nervous system is literally rewired.
Well. And so post-traumatic stress disorder, it refers, I guess, to someone being incapacitated to a bigger degree than someone who's just had the event.
Yeah, and they may well be getting quite a lot of symptoms of PTSD, which are very bodily. So it's experienced very much in the body. And the nervous system is firing off reactions to make that person feel that they're in danger when we might look at them and think, oh, you're not in danger. But actually they're feeling in danger and it's that felt danger and they're almost reliving that experience. Flashbacks occur. And in other cases, perhaps in more complex trauma, you have dissociative episodes where a person kind of loses, they're basically, their mind is blocking off the unthinkable which happened to them. And so they're almost blocking off that so much that they're in a different personality in some cases. They're almost speaking from a different voice, a different person, and they can go quite blank. So, yeah, lots of things can happen in the body. You can have a sense of hypervigilance and you're kind of jumpy and thinking that there's danger all over the place. You might see a flash and it reminds you of something, or you hear a door banging and it reminds you of something that happened before that was traumatic, like a childhood conflict in the childhood home. So, yeah, that kind of thing can happen.
Right. And there's another acronym, just to find one, I guess, yeah, to understand. And that's ACE, ACE, Adverse Child Experiences. So take us through that.
Yeah. So the research studies done in the 90s and so on, they have highlighted that children who've been through adverse childhood experiences will be more susceptible to having immune disorders, chronic diseases, sensory disorders, and endocrine. That means the hormone system is uprooted and changed a bit. And then you may have people who struggle to connect to daily life. It's disconnection. And trauma is basically a disorder of disconnection. Disconnection not only with other people, but from yourself almost. You're like disconnected from your own body sometimes. You feel like you are. I've actually got another acronym if you want it.
Oh, please do, yes.
4 D's that happen to people when they've been through trauma. Their sense of danger, D for danger, D for disconnection. So feeling disconnected from others and from one's own body. Disempowerment, when people have been through trauma, they feel very disempowered, not able to have the agency to do what they need to and take control of the things that are going on around them. And then dissociation, which is what I mentioned earlier, where people dissociate from their own situation by sort of possibly blanking it out or behaving in certain ways that make them feel like they can cope better.
So I'm going to ask a few questions, which I appreciate. You may have to say, well, actually, this you know, it's too detailed to understand. But what's the best idea on why two people can go through a similar event, one experiences trauma and the other not?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Well, I know some of the psychiatrists who study trauma would say that some of the big differences is about how much support you get from a key adult in your life. So if you've had a key adult somewhere in your background that has been supporting you during your trauma, so you'll hear stories like the one of Ian Wright, the footballer, who had a key teacher at school in all his background of trauma. This one teacher was so supportive, and that just helped massively. And so in churches, we know that youth leaders, children's workers are all just massively impactful in the lives of these families and children, and can make that difference between the trauma being really toxic and much more, I mean, it's still very difficult to overcome trauma, but having that one key adult can make such a lot of difference.
So, Ruth, your aim is to help faith organisations to be trauma-informed. How do you go about that?
Yeah, so we deliver training, and we also have the availability of consultation that we can do with an organisation, a church or an organisation indeed, such as a charity that works with homeless people. This applies greatly to those kind of charities, people who work in debt advice. But how we go about it is we want to see churches and other organisations be super welcoming to these people. We don't want them to be falsely over the top, but we want to see them be really able to welcome people in a genuine kind of way. We focus on felt safety as well, because felt safety is really important. These people, like I mentioned earlier, very often don't feel very safe emotionally, and so they need someone to be supportive. They need an environment which is feeling safe as well. Maybe thinking about how our services, if we're a church, what our services are like from start to finish. What does the person encounter when they first arrive at the church? Or indeed, maybe they're looking at your website and they're thinking, is this church for me? Is this church going to be safe enough for me? So even our website needs to have things on it that indicate that how welcoming we're going to be. And then the welcome team at the door, what kind of welcome do they offer? Are they too touchy-feely? Because that can be off-putting. And for someone that's touch sensitive, that has been through physical abuse, that might be the worst thing. But churches love to hug people, and maybe that's not always the best thing.
And the sort of misconceptions you find, I'm sure you're talking, and as people ask questions, you realise that sometimes there's a failure to grasp things, not, you know, no fault intended, but it's just misconceptions that people have.
Yeah, I find that quite a lot. I think we need to challenge that, because we can re-traumatise people as churches and Christian organisations if we don't think about our misconceptions. Maybe, I mean, we're great in church about praying for people, and I would in no way want to stop people praying for someone, but I think we need to challenge the misconception that prayer alone will heal someone. And sometimes they do need professional help. In fact, quite often, I think people need to go for professional help. And also another misconception is that we are it, and we can do everything we need to do. In our training, we make sure people go away knowing that what we're offering in the training we're offering is really just a start. We're not training anyone to be counsellors or therapists, and people need to know when they're not the person to support. I think that's another thing. Another misconception, faith is always enough. And again, I totally believe faith in Jesus is absolutely imperative. We need it, and it changes lives. And there's a huge number of testimonies where lives are changed because of faith in Jesus. But yeah, people sometimes need professional help. Then another one, forgiveness, talking about forgiveness in churches, it's again a huge part of the Christian journey to be able to forgive, and forgiving helps us to move on, doesn't it? But if we are in a situation where we're perpetually exposed to some sort of dangerous individual, like in domestic abuse or a child or family where there's some danger going on there, constant abuse or neglect, then, you know, that person needs, before they begin to forgive, they probably need to either report the situation. This is where your safeguarding officer comes in at church. Or they need to be removed from that situation first. But yes, forgiveness is a huge answer. One more thing, actually, Andy, I've just thought is, in the old days, people would think about these kind of, the kind of behaviours that people present with after going through trauma. They might sort of label it as, oh, it's a demon. And yeah, I think we need to be very careful that we don't mistake something, for example, like dissociation. Dissociative disorders can present in such a way where there's a splitting off of thoughts and fragmentation of self. And so, yeah, we don't want to label that as demon possession.
No, that's enormously helpful, Ruth. Thank you. And you hinted that sometimes people need therapy. I was going to say, what kind of solutions do people need? That will be one of them, won't it?
Yeah, definitely. And some people are not ready for therapy. I think we also, as pastoral care teams in our churches, need to be on it, really, perhaps getting ourselves upskilled a little bit and how to do the first aid part of the support. As churches, we can pray for people, we can do the first aid part, and then learning what our limitations are. But yeah, felt safety, because felt safety is a big priority with people who've been through trauma. How can we make coming to our church, our organisation, feel safe?
And often you would find that the therapy or the counselling would probably take place outside of the church gathering. I certainly think that seems to be the practice.
Yeah, that would be better, because it's hard when someone sees their counsellor on a day-to-day basis. I think it can make them feel a little bit silenced. And so then not everything is covered in the therapy. It may well be less objective. So yeah, it's good to go someone outside the situation you're in.
So Ruth, maybe a charity or a church has invited you in and you've done the kind of assessment. What are the kind of things that you advise them to do differently? You've hinted at it in our conversation thus far, but are there particular things you'd say do's and don'ts, if you like?
Yeah, I think, yeah, just take a good look at the journey someone experiences when they come to your organisation. What's the first thing they see? What's the next thing they see? And then when they're actually there, what do they get given, offered? Where are they? Are they shown where to sit? Are they given some clear kind of sense of what's going to happen next? In your children's work, quite often children's work will have little visual timetables, which really helps children know what's going to happen next. And I think a lot of adults need that. other things that people can do on a simple level to help their church become more trauma-informed is maybe creating a safe space in your church. Is there a corner or a room that people can go to if they feel like they're being triggered by something that's happened? Perhaps someone's been speaking in the sermon about forgiveness and they've suddenly begun to realize, oh my word, something dreadful happened to me when I was young and I need to forgive and I just don't know how to. Maybe there's a room they can go to, and that room could be just equipped with really soft lighting, low level sound, and some strokeable cushions or something like that, just really simple stuff. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. And then it's about the people, because whoever is there with that person, it needs to be someone that's not too intrusive, somebody that's got that warmth about them without being too intrusive. There's loads of little practical things to think about. I mentioned earlier about our welcome teams and our prayer ministry teams as well, even. What are our prayer ministry teams doing? Is it a little bit threatening to go forward for prayer? Probably it is. And do we ask before we lay hands on people? Because some of us maybe like to lay hands on people, but the person may not like that. Just thinking about how people with a background of trauma have probably got sensory disturbances. So is our music really loud? Is the lighting too flashy? I think there's a lot of churches that love that kind of stage appearance, isn't there? And, you know, that kind of thing can be quite traumatizing for some people.
Okay.
So, yeah, loads of little things that you can do.
Thanks, Ruth. And how would a leader spot the triggers in themselves or spot the signs in themselves that maybe some trauma from the past is actually affecting the way they lead? And what might they do next?
Well, great question. I think this is the thing I feel very strongly about, that one of the principles of trauma-informed care is preventing re-traumatization. And there are leaders who unfortunately have taken up a position of leadership due to their own, partly to meet their own needs. And I think we have in the past perhaps not really checked out, is this leader secure in themselves? How is their security, their self-worth, their significance, and their sense of identity? So I think as leaders, we need to examine ourselves and think back in our own past. I'm big into attachment psychology. And so attachment is about your sense of safety, and parents are meant to protect us from danger, but sadly not all parents do. And so if we've had any background of difficulties in attachment due to parents that have perhaps not by any fault of their own not protected us as they should, or have been abusive, in fact, then we're likely to act out of strategies that protect ourselves. And attachment strategies are things like, if somebody makes you feel like you're small and you're worthless, you might attack them. An attack can be what they feel is the best means of defense. So these traits can form in leadership that make the leadership become that abuser almost. And so I think it's really important that we have authenticity in our leadership. That also, I'm quite big into leaders having a opportunity for supervision. In my job, we have to get what's called clinical supervision on a regular basis. And that's all about quality control. It's about an opportunity to be able to reflect on your practice. And I really think that pastors, ministers, leaders of any sort need that reflective time, maybe a spiritual director or someone outside the situation, ideally, where they can reflect. And that culture of keeping a culture of authenticity in your church is hugely important.
Ruth, well, it's been terrific to chat with you. Just to remind us how people can get in touch with you if they feel like, yeah, this is really something we need to do in our organisation or in our church.
Yeah, so we've got a website and it's www.jointhedots.solutions. And we also have presence on social media, on Instagram and Facebook. So, yeah, you can get in touch in those ways. You can sign up to our mailing list through our website, and we'd love to hear from you.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you so much for all that you've shared.
That was my conversation with the founding director of Join the Dots Solutions, Ruth Stevens. Her website again, jointhedots.solutions. Hopefully the conversation gave you an insight into the topic. In case you have those that you work with or serve who experience the effects of trauma, it also may be that you are aware that a past event is affecting you in an unhealthy and unhelpful way, and that needs processing. So do phone Premier Lifeline 0300 111 0101. Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. They will be happy to chat with you, to pray with you, maybe to redirect you to some further help, should that be necessary. I recall many years ago a conversation with Simon Walker, who said that in conversation with 200 leaders, he had never met anyone whose leadership style was not affected by his or her upbringing. So some salutary thoughts there. And if that upbringing was traumatic, then it's quite likely that you need some processing and some time reflecting on how that's affected you with someone else. So this is Andy Peck thanking you for your company and looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.